We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Check out the Geek Nation Tours New York Comic Con package, combining all the excitement of the convention with a tour of the city and the coolest sights for the superhero fan. You'll recognize locations from films and books and visit geek culture sites like Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Hey, and here we go. It is We Talk Comics, episode 130. It is We Talk Comics Exposed. We're bringing you some stories from the 2015 Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. And I am the host, Keith, and I'm joined by the All-Star team, the All-Star Squadron. Chris, say hi.
Hi, I'm here. It was an awesome expo.
Mo.
Hey, yo, it's Mo. Look, how big is this expo now, Keith?
102,000 people this year.
Yeah, so when we sit there and we say to you, we're going to say this, it's not just for our own good. This thing's a big enough event that it deserves the coverage we're going to give it. Plus, we got funny stories and a ton of interviews.
And we have one more host, Brett.
Yay, hooray for me.
Thanks for making it out.
I do my best.
I think this was, the four of us saw more inside the expo time than ever before. I think this is the first time that we all were there for all 4 days.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a hell of a grind, but we made it through.
I planned ahead and took the Monday off too, which was the smartest thing I did in the whole plan.
That's the first smart thing I've known you to do.
Well, yeah, there was one earlier, but I mean, I was in my 20s.
I didn't see it, though.
No, nobody did.
Yeah,
I just kind of stared at the wall on the Monday, because Expo Now has a Thursday preview, and then all day Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We did, between the bunch of us, we did six panels that we moderated or set up or hosted. You'll be hearing all of those as episodes. Some of them are already up. Some of them are still to come. And, that was 7 hours of content almost from, just the panels. And we did a whole bunch of interviews, which you're going to hear on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some hidden stuff that we're going to save in case we can put something cool together. And if we can't, you'll hear it in another form that's not cool.
We'll pretend that the form you hear it later is the cool thing.
The cool one regardless.
Yeah.
The
form,
pretty good interviews. They're really
the form
good
doesn't have to be cool. The content is.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know if I've ever put up an interview and said, this is the interview that we're just burning off because it's really getting old.
We've done that.
Could have a couple times.
We've done it. I don't think we've told people we're doing it. There'd be a good title for an episode, though. We Talk Comics burns off some interviews.
We Talk Comics.
We have our first call-in. caller, please turn down your radio. Getting some feedback.
Well, they just won't go away.
All of us are wondering. I don't have a landline, so it's not me.
No, it was me.
But,
I've been receiving nothing but phone calls for the election.
Brett must be in a contested riding.
Gotcha. All right, well let's get to the thing. So Thursday night, we show up. What are your first impressions of this year's expo? Because there was a lot of, I think it was fair to say, there was a lot of curiosity as to how popular the expo would be. 102,000 is partially, I think, momentum from previous years. Partially, obviously, what they're doing is just working. There was a lot of people who were curious about how much interest there would be in the guests, both the media guests and the creator guests. I was excited for the creator guests. I thought they had a good lineup, but you can't please everybody. That was certainly one of the vibes I was getting. But anyways, what were you guys' first impressions?
I really liked that they had the new building incorporated into it. Did making getting tickets and into the con a whole lot easier this year than in previous years.
Well, I will say that it's nice for us because we don't actually have to stand in the line. Although, that's true. But we did a lot of running around on that day, just attempting to get all the passes and the ducks in order.
We did have a lot of hustling. I saw very little of the convention between getting our credentials and everything set up, and then our first panel was at 6 p.m. The show started at 4, so we're actually only 5, was it? And
four's right, four. But
it's probably past 5 by the time we got settled in and everything there. I think we were there about 3, hour early, and then
Yeah, and then to get all of our guests arranged and everything, so we had a 5 o'clock. The We Talk Comics live panel was at 5, and then I moderated an art panel at 6. So I didn't get to see a whole lot of the show that night. I mean, certainly the crowds surprised me. It is a reminder that comic fans, especially, will grumble and grumble and grumble, and then they still turn up. It's what we see at every comic book movie. It's what we see at every convention. What are you going to do? Not go?
Well, that's exactly it. One of the things I can say this year is it was obvious right away there. And you talked about the first panel was like immediately 6 p.m. or whatever. And then you had another one at 7, or was it the other way around 5 p.m.? And it was quick though. Yeah. So one of the things that this year, in the previous years, we had our panels, we were largely rounding up the participants in the panels ourselves. And this year, the expo did, except for maybe one of the panels, did a tremendous job of getting the people that were scheduled to be our guests on the panels out there for us to participate, making sure somebody was watching the table for them, getting them there on time so they were more organized on that. And that was greatly appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, aside from some small press folk, really, we weren't. It wasn't us going looking at, 10 minutes to the time.
Exactly. So that was awesome. So you host the first panel. You felt it went well. That panel is already up. It's an enjoyable panel. It's Stephanie Chang, Ryan Ferrier, Robert Venditti. Chris is on there, of course. Brett, you're up there. Keith, of course. Is that it? Was that the whole panel?
Oh, you forgot fake Stan Lee.
And also,
I was going to get there.
Fake Stan Lee.
Because if you've heard it, you probably didn't. Without the visual, I don't know that you 100% understood what's going on. So, Brett, why don't you explain this one, since essentially...
Wait a minute. With the visual, I didn't understand completely 100% what was going on.
No, it was the ultimate case of something that could have truly been funny or could have been horrific, and it fell into the horrific category. But hey, best laid plans and all that. Because I work at a... I work with guys that are in TV, and this one guy is... he was planning on going to the expo for the TV station, and he was planning on dressing up like Stan Lee and just going and interacting with the crowd. And so I thought...
Originally, his plan was to interview Stan Lee as Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself...
Stan Lee last minute had to cancel.
Yeah. But I thought to myself that, well, maybe, just maybe, this guy would, who is a funny guy... Why don't I just tell him that he should?
Host, television.
Yeah. I should just tell him that he should just, come onto our panel and just crash the panel, because I figured, man, it's going to be hilarious. We're going to have this silly Stan Lee, and life's going to be good. After that, who cares what'll happen? And I figured I'd have a stick mic, be walking around a little bit, so there'd be a good chance for a little bit of interaction.
Lacking in general this year at the expo, unfortunately. That was something that we didn't have as we did the previous year.
Yeah.
The stick mics.
And so.
But no, you did. And I had alluded to, just to give the panel a slight heads up, that we might have a surprise guest joining us. but I didn't say anything, which is why I got blamed for this.
Yeah, exactly. But what I guess I didn't anticipate was just how truly horrific a Stan Lee would wind up being. I expected maybe, like, because it was two prongs in the problems. A, he didn't sound like Stan Lee, and B, he didn't look like Stan Lee.
He didn't look like Stan Lee. Well, you're forgetting, and C, other than Excelsior, he knew nothing about Stan Lee, so he could not say anything else.
He lacked the knowledge of Stan Lee that an episode of The Big Bang Theory would have really given him. Actually,
pretty much. Like he had no idea, like how to say anything. Like he didn't know Stan Lee, and he didn't know any of his sayings. Or I think he might have also thrown a True Believer in there, but I'm not sure. Excelsior, you know. But there's one other thing you could never have anticipated. Ryan Ferrier, of course, the writer of Dave, Curb Stomp, and the great Sons of Anarchy comic from Boom. And our good friend here, fellow Calgarian, Brett, Ryan.
Oh, man. Well, Rob was beside me and Ryan was beside him. And after Rolf came in as Stan, I instantly saw them both just kind of tense up. And it was kind of obvious that they were not very happy. And so it was at that point it became a little bit of just diffusing the situation and trying to get the panel back on track again, you know. And I mean, Rolf hung around for a little bit, you know, but then he just realized that there was nothing for him to do, and that nobody was really getting it. And then he just kind of, you know, shuffled off.
You're way underselling just how pissed off Ryan was.
See, I spoke to Ryan the next day, and he was 100% unaware that it was a planned thing.
Yes.
He thought that this guy had authentically crashed our panel. He had no idea there was any pre-planned that we were in on the, and I don't know how to use air quotes on the podcast, but we were in on the joke.
Yes. I use the joke loosely.
use that term in the loosest sense. So yeah, he was reacting honestly to, probably my favorite phrase of the weekend. I'm going to dress up like Jack Kirby and dance on your grave.
yeah, I know he was very mad, and apparently he had heard about somebody like at some other convention there was somebody who was dressing up as Stan Lee and crashing panels or something like that. So he had. Yeah, he thought this was just something. He had heard about something like this at some other panel or some other place.
I had no idea that this was even a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it just seemed like
he just really dislikes people dressing as Stan Lee.
I mean, honestly, like you know, I figured that We Talk Comics Live could use every little bit of help that it could get. So, you know, how bad could this be? Well...
I think after all these years, you've got to trust the talent you've got and not bring in these outsiders, because clearly this is where it all went wrong.
Yeah, that's it. And after that, we you finished that one up. You finished up the art panel, which was I think it was scheduled for 7 hours.
It actually just ended 2 hours ago. So we're happy to have you on the show tonight.
Yeah, this was the longest panel I think presented the whole weekend for some reason.
Might have been. Well, this happened last year too. That they actually gave us the room for as long as we wanted to have it. I think we ran about 65 minutes maybe last year for the art critique panel, which is not one we put up as a podcast. It was so visual that it wouldn't have worked anyway. But this one was scheduled. We had a 2-hour block, and they told us just as long as the conversation. Feels it keeps going, and as long as people have questions.
We actually posted that earlier today. It's an 85 minute long show, and it is an interesting show, but that's a long time to ask people to sit for a panel as well. That's all.
Well, thankfully I'm not asking them to sit for a panel anymore. I pop your headphones on, go for a nice long 85 minute walk.
Hey, listen to it for 20 minutes, pause it, come have some supper.
Right.
Go back and listen to the rest, and you'll enjoy it that way.
I already got a compliment from Chris will like this. The artist of Doberman has listened to the episode, really, really dug it.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. All right. So so then we got Robert Venditti, our buddy Rob, and he was coming to Canada for the first time. So we decided we'd take him for some authentic Canadian cuisine. And the only thing that that would count would be mac and cheese, Kraft dinner specifically, and poutine. These are really the only things that count as Canadian cuisine. Poutine, for those of you aren't aware, is French fries, and then you put gravy on it, and then cheese curds. So we're not the healthiest people.
We don't live long, but we live well.
Hey, we got free health care. Why do we have to be healthy?
Other people have done gravy and fries. We're the ones who came up with cheese curd, specifically out there in Quebec.
And poutine, and meat as
we
as
pronounce
well
it here, poutine, as I think is announced there. So anyways, we grabbed Rob and our friend Connor McCreary. I almost got that one wrong. Connor McCreary, who of course is a co-writer of Kill Shakespeare and Houdini versus Sherlock Holmes. That's a really good book. So a pair of really good books. And we went out for supper, got some fancy poutine with them, hung out for a while, heard some behind the scenes stories, heard a pitch that that Connor'd like to do for Marvel Comics that sounds awesome if he could ever get it done. A few inside stories about DC editorial that we can't share. I don't know. What else, guys? What did you guys think of that night, hanging out with the boys?
If every night could go that well, I think that's how I'd spend my life.
That's pretty
eating
fair.
Poutine and hanging out with comic book folk.
Having a beer doing it.
I mean, we're not going to talk about what the concept was, but it was really cool to hear Rob, who's he's fairly new in comics, but he's moved up so quickly. And Connor, who's been very successful with the book he's been working on and just kind of slowly expanding. But for Connor to say, here's this idea, one of my dream ideas to pitch. And then the two of them kind of like spitballing back and forth, how you tweak that, how you sell it to an editor, how you make it work. It was really fascinating to hear. Also, like that poutine was insane.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like, yeah. It was like two kinds of meat and three kinds of cheese. And
Rob asked me like 2 days later, like, is that normal? Like, is that what that's always like?
Oh, we're getting you special poutine. You know, we're not going to just give you any poutine.
I do love
that. We're not giving you Vladimir Putin, no sir.
No.
Good Putin.
I do love that it was like 1,500 calories worth of poutine, and it was listed on the side menu. We actually did have a conversation early and there's a picture up on it was probably up on the We Talk Podcast Twitter of a group of us out there, and
I think it just went up on your Twitter actually.
Oh, maybe it did. I should get retweeted by WeTalk.
Yeah, I got Roberta K. There's a really good chance that's going to be this show's picture, though. So,
and there was actually honest talk of, should we order that? Should we order a couple of these to share and then get entrees?
Well, let's say honest talk. What happened was, yes, as Connor looked at and said, "Well, do you want to get ones to share?" And then maybe some other things. And I shot him a look that probably – I'm surprised he's still alive. But it did cause him to get up and leave thinking that he had offended me so badly, which he had, that he was no longer welcome. But eventually I'm Canadian. I'm very forgiving. He was eventually allowed to come back. But, we were there for Putin or poutine. I really have no idea how to pronounce this. I'm just going to continue using both. Either way, you folk kids, don't try and make this at home. This is for experts only.
And yeah, we had a great night out and telling stories and chatting with those guys. I think maybe if we're done with Thursday, do you want to let's go to our first interview?
But I just want to say because you had mentioned watching them go back and forth. The thing is that, Rob came into comics, read Astro City, a few other Busiek books, You know, I mean, not an awful lot. Got the job at Valiant, so he started reading old Valiant and current Valiant. Got the job at DC, so he started reading old DC and new DC. This was a Marvel Comics project, and he doesn't know Marvel at all. Like, he doesn't know any of their characters, really, at all. Because he's really never read them. He didn't read a comic book until he was 27. He's 41 now. And so what was interesting was watching him converse with Connor, who know the characters actually fairly well in the universe. Like, you got the feeling, but you see quickly why it is he moved up so fast. You saw how quickly he could process information, come up with an original idea, tweak it, and just, it was fascinating to watch Rob's mind work in that creative sense. So I love that. So anyways, yeah, move on to a Friday. What's the first interview we're going to go to?
Well, why don't we go to the first interview that we did on Friday? That would be with the amazing Richard Starkings. And yeah. he was a great guy, although he mentioned that he didn't have a hat, but I will say that he did get a hat by the end of the day. Yeah. He had his hat
There's
back.
There's a point in this where he mentions that he was told at conventions always wear a hat was some of the advice he got. And he didn't have it, but he did find one later, so don't worry about him. He's going to be all right, kids. But, you did most of the interview. I got one question in, mainly talking about Elephant Man, though there's a ton of his career you could talk about. Obviously, yeah. Richard Starkings. Yeah.
Well, again, yeah. It's...
I think he's the most famous, the most influential letterer of the last probably three decades.
Yeah, I mean, him it's and, difficult.
How are you pronouncing it? Chris Eliopoulos?
Oh, Eliopoulos, yeah.
Eliopoulos, maybe them, maybe him, you know, but... yeah, I mean,
I
really...
would say Starkings and his work—it's Comicraft.
Comicraft, yeah.
Yeah, I think with Comicraft, I mean, he revolutionized lettering.
Yo, absolutely.
I really think so too. So I mean, really. So I mean, you could have had just the conversation on that, but we concentrated on his excellent book coming out that comes out through Image and been out for years, Elephant Man, which if you haven't checked out, you should. That's the majority of this interview, isn't it, Brent?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, he doesn't really letter anymore. I mean, he just writes Elephant Men. So, I mean, it seems kind of silly to focus on lettering unless you had him on for a massive show.
Well,
it's difficult.
Talk about him revolutionizing it.
But it's difficult to talk for a long time at across the table at a comic convention. But the truth is,
It would be nice to pick his brain for a long time, but this wasn't the time, though. So it's just an Elephant Man interview, and what do we just throw to it now?
Sure. I mean, you make it sound like it's a bad. It wasn't a good enough interview.
No, I don't think it's
bad. Let's go to Brent's terrible interview.
It's great. It's a great book, and it was a really good interview. I mean, I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot.
All right. Hello. This is Brett from We Talk Comics, and I'm here with Mo and, of course, our super special legendary guest, Richard Starkings of Elephant Men and, of course, Comicraft. But so, Richard, how is it going for you this year?
This year in general or this year at Calgary?
Both.
Both. It's going great. You know, this is, a third show this year, and we put out how many issues? Three issues, a new trade paperback, The Red Queen, and... it's going good. Cannot complain, often do.
Do you find that Elephant Men, I mean, it's been around for a long time now. Is there...
What are you saying, I'm old?
No, actually, I'm saying that you have longevity, which is awesome. But is there, like, a book that's more popular than the rest of all of them?
Interesting enough, you know, for this show, I brought a lot of Volume 1s because every show I go to, there's always new readers, and... most of the people that start reading it buy subsequent volumes at their local stores. So if I bring 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't sell very many of them. And the fact that there's still people buying Volume 1 from me at shows means that stores are under-ordering it. Because they're not seeing it in stores. But obviously, you know, I'm here with a banner. People come and see it. They're like, I've heard of this. I haven't seen it before. I'd like to buy it from you. So, and in fact, I mean, just in the last 10 minutes, I sold 6 Volume 1s, which just proves the point, which is that there's always new readers out there. And we did the latest thinner trades as a way of providing a sort of affordable jumping on point. The first trade is 2260 book 1 is just $10. And we sell a lot of those too, because people are always looking for something new, you know, and I think more so in the last 5 or 10 years, because there's an influx of people, especially female readers who read manga, in the late 90s and early noughties, and they are much more open to new things than your big two readers. You know, Vertigo and Manga sort of educated readers to commit to 10 volumes or 20 volumes and then start something else, as opposed to reading Avengers your entire life or reading Batman your entire life. So we've got a much more discerning customer and younger customers. In the 90s, we were still an aging readership. Manga brought in lots of new readers who were open, and science fiction, horror, you know, soap, teenage books, you know, there's a much broader readership now, and because of the preponderance of science fiction and science fantasy movies, people are coming to shows like this because they love Lord of the Rings, because they love Star Wars, and then they're like, well, what's Elephant Men? What's Manhattan Project? What's Saga? These are great, they're new and exciting, and it's kind of like Manga, I think, was interesting and exciting because the Japanese comic book creators sort of sold Disney back to us. They absorbed everything about American culture, digested it, and then sort of gave it back with a twist. So it's not surprising to me that Attack on Titan is one of the biggest selling comics in the Western world, outsells Walking Dead in some comic book stores, you know, because it's different, it's new, and it's a series, you know, and it has that sort of appeal for a young audience.
So I guess how hard is it, like, working on Elephant Men, especially because you're not part of the big two? I mean, you are part of Image, but you know, how hard is it to, like, sell Elephant Men and continue working on it and keep producing at the level that you're producing?
Terry Pratchett said it best. He said, go out and meet your readership, number one. Number two, get a hat. I lost my hat yesterday, but I do have hats. And it's that easy. You have to go and meet your readership and encourage people that haven't read your book to read it. The big two kind of take their readership for granted, and Marvel actually doesn't have a presence at a lot of comic book shows because they take their audience for granted. They think of themselves as Coca-Cola or sliced bread. Well, Coca-Cola still advertises, you know, and I think that's why there's been such a big influx of readers of Image Comics and Dark Horse and Boom, because, you know, when Hertz is the biggest car rental firm in the world, then Avis has to try harder, and that was their slogan, we try harder.
Yeah.
Image comic book creators try harder, and they have freedom, so they can put the book out that they want to put out. They're not saying, well, my editor made me put Robin in or Wolverine, or, you know, well, it wasn't the direction I wanted to go in. You know, it can be difficult working without a safety net, and Marvel and DC are big safety nets and they pay the bills, but, you know, I learned how to pay my own bills and put out the book that I wanted to put out.
You got a question, Mo?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Actually, Brett here is the one who gave me this book, and I remember taking a look at the cover thinking I was getting a funny animal book, you know, something that would be light and easy to read, lighthearted book.
You think these guys are funny animals?
Seriously, yes, based on, you know, a cover like this.
Yeah.
And instead, of course, the content is far more, it's darker, it's more mature, it's more complex. An amazing book. I was very impressed. But is that kind of something that you are coming across? Is the idea of what the book is easy to get across to people?
I don't think so, because, you know, I'm sorry, but you're not the typical young audience. And I think you're forgetting that, you know, if you're 20 years old now, the Lord of the Rings movies are more in your consciousness than Star Wars. Even the prequels, right? The Hobbit is what you're being taken to by your parents. The Matrix was something that ran on cable when you were 10, right? Alien is like a B-movie that happened 40 years ago. So it's actually a harder sell to older readers who have prejudice, like, oh, it's a funny animal comic because of whatever reason, you know, Bar Bar or whatever. And I get a lot of sort of comments aesthetically along those lines from my contemporaries, but that's not my audience. I'm aiming the book at the kind of reader I was when I was 16, you know, and I loved Alien, and I loved Blade Runner, and I loved Savage Sword of Conan. So, you know, what you have to do is sort of exactly what the Japanese market did. Take it in and process it, and then, you know, deliver it to a new audience through that prism. And I'm making it exciting. I'm making it like Blade Runner. I'm making it like Alien, but... It's through everything else I've absorbed. Doctor Who and all the comics I grew up with, and the Fantastic Four has a big influence on it. And you know, when Hulk came out, I'm sure that people said, hold on a second, a big green guy that's transformed by an atom bomb, what, you know, what are you reading? What rubbish is this? That's what people our age would have said to kids.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the mentality. It took a long time for Marvel and DC characters to be in the general awareness, you know, and really something's broken through. Like, if you say Planet of the Apes to anyone, even if they've never seen it, they know what you're talking about. There are people out there, believe it or not, who've not seen Star Wars, but they know what you're talking about. When you break through that, where people who don't know it, haven't read it, haven't seen it, know about it, that's when you're part of public consciousness. You know, and every project can get there. You just have to believe in it yourself until your belief inside becomes other people's belief outside. And when people start telling you ideas that they have for your characters, you've started to cross that bridge.
Wow, that's fantastic. I just have two last questions for you. One, what are you most proud of with the Elephant Men series? And then the last one will be just to plug your stuff. What's coming out for you in this year?
I'm always most proud of the most recent issue, and I just wrote an issue. Because it's called Elephant Man, a lot of people ask me, oh, is this the Elephant Man? Well, I finally did an issue that addresses that, where the movie is playing in the background of an issue and informs the situation that the Elephant Men find themselves in. So I'm really proud of that issue, but I'm also going to be proud of the next issue that I write, you know. And, you know, the Red Queen story just came out in trade paperback. That's the most recent book available. I'm proud of particularly of an issue in that in which H.R. Giger actually appears in the issue. Boo did this cover, which is an homage to a specific piece by Giger called Death Delivery Machine. And the whole issue is about the birth and growth of the Elephant Men as weapons. And Boo drew that right before H.R. Giger died, and everybody thought we were sort of jumping on a bandwagon. But after he died, I thought, you know, he's actually the perfect person to narrate this issue. So a character not unlike Giger appears in the issue and walks through artwork that is not unlike Giger's artwork.
Fantastic. Richard Starkings, you're awesome. Your Elephant Men is awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Brett, for doing that interview. We've got a couple more coming from you and a couple coming from me. Now let's move on to Friday. Friday was, we had no panels on Friday, the only day we didn't have panels. I think our plans of being there at when the doors opened, kind of went out the window after 18 pounds of poutine with, Rob and Connor. So I think we rolled in, somewhere between noon and one for, the lot of us. Shopping day for me. I bought fewer trades.
We didn't see you. We're out there doing stuff. We didn't see you for the rest of the day.
That's right. I said it was shopping day.
5 minutes of Keith.
And for us, it was interview and networking day. For Keith, it was shopping. Chris,
you guys did three interviews over the weekend, and I did two. So I'm not sure you were that far ahead.
We did five interviews.
We did five.
Yeah, whatever.
We just two of them, the Bob Layton and the Bernard Chang, are being held on to for a later date.
Plus I did the Tom Kenny, which we need to slide in as well at some point. So
that's right, the Tom Kenny. So that's six. So Keith, suck it.
That's like about twice ish of what I did. So yeah, good work.
Three times. That's three times what you did, and you did all yours late on the Sunday. Though I have to say, yours both went for almost as long as your art panel. You put some significant time in. We got a long time with Bob Layton, but not a lot with some of these other guys. Certainly not a lot with Garth Ennis, which we'll get to, but maybe we should just get to that.
Well, let's talk about the experience of the average congoer. Did you do a lot of shopping? Did you pick up anything interesting?
I spent more money than I've ever spent at the expo before. Didn't buy a single thing all weekend. I have no idea where it went.
I did buy
a lot of Screamers.
Oh, tell everyone what a Screamer is.
Screamer is a Slurpee and ice cream. They just put it together and charge you, I think, about $40 for that little cup. And it's worth it. I love it. It's like a Slurpee float.
Yeah, it's like a Slurpee float with soft serve ice cream in there.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, I want one now.
Mo, it's a good thing we recorded the art panel as a podcast, because Mo listened to about 5 minutes. He's like, I haven't had a Screamer in an hour, though. I've got to go.
Pretty much. I came back with my Screamer.
It's true.
Shopping, Brett? Did you get anything interesting?
I don't think I did any shopping on Friday. The only thing that I tried
we're
to do
the whole. Let's. We're just going to do this as a topic, so the whole weekend. It doesn't have to be just stuff you bought on Friday.
Yeah. No. I only bought a few trade paperbacks. When I got my son on Sunday, then I wound up buying a few. That was where I spent the vast majority of my money, was just buying him stuff. But yeah, for overall shopping, I didn't actually do that much of it.
Chris, you had
stuff given to me.
Yeah, I got some wicked cool stuff. Most of Friday, I spent looking for back issues to get signed from some of the talent that was there, and came up largely blank. I was really disappointed. But later on in the day, I found some cheap dollar bins and stuff, and all the stuff I was looking for seemed to be in there. I finished off some Funko pop collections that I've been working on, and I couldn't believe it, but I found a Prime action favorite figure from the 90s for only $4. It was a great con for shopping.
that was pretty great, that little Prime. Yeah, like I say, I had stuff given to me. That was really nice. So
yeah, I got some. I picked up some stuff. Most of what I got was from directly from creators. I didn't. I got a couple of trades from vendors, but most of it was directly from creators. Jim Zub had the Wayward limited hardcover, and then there was a con exclusive issue of Wayward, so I got those. And our pal Ryan Ferrier had a bunch of new stuff. Always got to find out what he's got happening. He had a little ash can he was giving away Gold Force.
He gave something bigger away, but we'll get there.
Gold Force 4, which he was giving away as an ash can. It's available on his Challenger Comics website, which is his reimagining of the Golden Girls as a spy outfit. It's amazingly funny. And a couple prints. I did end up buying a page of art from Bernard Chang from a issue of recent issue of Green Lantern Corps. I just looked for a Green Lantern page that had explosions on it, and that was the one that was going home with me. Yeah, John Stewart had a big explosion. It's good.
You know what? He was kind enough after our interview to just give a page to me and Brett. I actually tried to refuse him and tried to pay for it, and he wouldn't let us. He was, I can't tell you what a good guy he was. Just awesome.
He was fantastic, and he was part of one of the most uncomfortable moments I had in the entire convention. I was standing there waiting to look through his pages, and there was a woman in front of me in line chatting with him, who was telling him in excruciating detail. And this is Bernard Chang, who works, I believe he's exclusive with DC, telling him in exhausting detail why she will not buy anything from DC because Wonder Woman and Superman are dating. And the look of discomfort on his face of, you're not going to buy anything from me. You don't want anything signed. You just want to tell me how you don't like this book that I don't work on.
Well, Chris had stuff to say about a certain Valiant character, too. But we'll get there.
Oh, that was funny, though.
Was funny.
All right. So Friday, let's get to the Bernard. We were trying to get the Bernard Chang, and at the same time, we were trying to get the Garth Ennis. So it actually ended up, we split it up. I went to do the Chang, and then it got pushed off for a few hours. In the meantime, I was gone for, I think, about 47 seconds, and I came back, and you guys had completed the interview. Yep. Start to finish.
It was wrapped up.
Yeah, it wasn't very long. And I said, I haven't read a lot of Garth Ennis. I've never read Preacher, and, you know, I read like one issue of Punisher, and I haven't read a lot of Garth Ennis. And, so I was like, well, and Keith was out busy shopping, so we couldn't reach him. Ideally, he would have been there. And that's the first time I've ever said that about Keith. but he wasn't there. So I thought, well, Brett can handle it. And Chris is right here. Chris has read a ton of Ennis's stuff.
I would go as far to say I've read just about everything the man has ever written.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, well, we're in good shape. So now I'll leave it to the two of you to explain what happened next before we cut to the interview.
Well,
yeah, unfortunately, the only thought is, wait a minute, I did not know this man, Garth Ennis, looks like this. For some reason, I always thought he'd look like Alan Moore or something. And I'm talking to he's an English gentleman. I'm talking to this English gentleman. And that is the only thought I have. I completely froze. I came up with some dumbass questions, but really did not. Once again, I meet a guy I admire and really, really just fall on my face. Once again,
Chris, you're giving yourself too much credit. you asked a question.
Hey, we only got five questions, and I think we only got four in. So.
No. Actually, the funny thing is that we were given a maximum time of like 5 minutes and five questions. Now, the problem being is that Garth Ennis had no desire to answer any questions. So what really came up was I expected Chris to be able to have all these great, like, zingers. And Chris is stuck on Dog Welder. Can't get past Dog Welder. So after that point, we didn't get much else out of him. But here we are. We're trying to ask. And he's giving these,
Dog
like,
Welder,
one.
Before we go on. One of you to explain. Chris, explain.
I can't explain Dog Welder.
Dog Welder is a superhero with the most awesome superpower ever. He welds dogs to things and people. He can attach a dog. And to be fair, he carries a supply of dead dogs around with him at all times to weld to whatever he needs to weld a dog to.
Naturally.
So yeah, he first made his first appearance in the Hitman series. And,
yes.
And,
don't you have to?
Which I now have his first appearance signed by Garth
and
Ennis.
He's a DC. He's a DC character, and Garth Ennis, who looked exactly like I expected him to.
The way Chris is describing him, I think he looks like Bernard Cumberbatch now. The proper English gentleman, and I was taken aback.
Yeah. So, anyways, there we go. Brett, anything else you want to add?
It was. I think we got six questions in, but it lasted a lot less than 5 minutes. Like, honestly, our talking about it has gone way longer than the interview did. But at the same time, when I came back to get something signed by him, he was really nice. So, in the end, it all worked out.
I actually was very excited about meeting him, and then he was not at his table any of the 10 times I went by on Saturday and Sunday.
I
never heard anyone that saw him after sometime on Saturday. So maybe he flew back early. I don't know.
All right. Hello. I'm Brett from We Talk Comics here with Garth Ennis. How are you doing, Garth?
Pretty good, Flanky. Hope.
Awesome. So let's see now. The first question that I'm going to ask you is, how do you manage to stay so prolific? You write a lot of books. What is your secret sauce?
I think I just like writing. I average out a script a week. Some people I know take 2-3 weeks over them, but I've always been comfortable with one a week. I think it's because I love what I do so much, and I love telling stories, and I like getting through to the end of the story to see how it all turns out.
Okay, Chris here. I got to say, I'm a huge fan, particularly your Hitman run. How do you feel about Section 8 getting its own book? Are you getting a piece of that, I hope?
I'm sorry, a piece of it?
Section 8?
Yes, right, but a piece of it?
Are you getting, like, money?
Oh, no, the characters are owned by DC. Yeah, Hitman was work for hire.
Okay, well, until Dogwalder gets his own book, I'm not happy. With you writing, of course.
You never know. If this one goes over well, we might be able to do another. And I can tell you that Dogwalder does survive the first series.
They're there for the spectacle. They're not there for the
fun. Awesome.
So, I
need a minute to change out of Dogwalder mode.
So what of your work then would you say that you're most proud of?
My favorites would be the war stories, the old Vertigo ones, which are going back in print this summer from Avatar, Battlefields from Dynamite, same series, different title, and the new war stories that started running about 6 months ago. I think the military fiction I write is very much my favorite.
I just read War Stories number one, and I'm really impressed with the amount of research that you put into it. Is there, like, do you get up and, like, just start reading books and just, like, devour those kind of texts to really get into the characters and find the stories?
It's more that I read a good deal of military history anyway. So when it comes time to write the stories, I probably already know a good deal of what I'm about to write about. I do occasionally consult the books just to fine-tune the stories, technical details, and so on. But it's more that my general interest in military history inspires a lot of stories. Reading historians like Max Hastings, Anthony Beaver, Rick Atkinson, and so on, I almost find something new I'd like to write about on every page.
So then, just to switch gears a little bit, Dominic Cooper, I hear, has been confirmed for Preacher. What do you think of that?
I've not actually seen him in anything, but he certainly looks the part.
All right, then. And then, let's see now. What are, like, just coming up for the year, what have you got to work on, and what have you got to plug?
Well, let's see. War Stories will be ongoing. The new stories just started. That's the last German winter. After that, the next one will be Our Wild Geese Go, which is about Irish soldiers in the British Army in World War II. There's an old British character called Johnny Red, which is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I think that starts in October. You've got Section 8 in June. And apart from that, a lot of stuff that's written, that's being drawn, that will probably come out next year. Oh, and one other, there's a book for Marvel called The Phantom Eagle Flies the Savage Skies, and that is essentially a biplanes versus dinosaurs story.
That sounds awesome. Garth Ennis, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, well, I'm glad we didn't, wander far from our microphone during that interview. I didn't have enough time to refill my water glass. So we decided against doing anything. No more poutine on Friday night. Rested
up.
That
was the one night to try and get home and get some breath. It was a big weekend coming.
Rested up, and we were back at it on Saturday.
Yeah. Aren't we going to throw to one of the other Friday interviews first?
Well, they don't know when they were recorded. I don't know why you wanted to do them that way.
I just thought.
I kind of thought we'd do like a day and interview, a day and interview. I mean, we've got five, so it's one more than will fit, but.
We got six, actually, because of the Tom Kenny. Which
yeah, well, the Tom Kenny will be long, so we'll put that up by itself.
Yeah, how long is it? That's right, it is a long one.
Yeah, it'll be about 20, 30 minutes, so.
I'll put it up as a special. It's not really comic book related anyways.
That's right.
I'm sure he does probably a comic book character, but best known as SpongeBob. So
that can be the premiere episode of We Talk Cartoons. Except we're just announcing now that we're watching.
Last year's We Talk Comics Live was.
yeah, that's right.
All right. So Saturday, and then we'll talk about the interview we did on Saturday. First things, get in Saturday, get settled in, get organized, and get to a panel. Was that about it?
Yeah, I didn't do much else other than panels.
Yeah, we had three panels on Saturday. So that was they were spread out, we didn't have them back to back, but it just, even an hour between meant we were kind of, you know, doing a panel and then getting ourselves rearranged and then back to a panel. It was really just enough time for Mo to get another screamer, and we were back at it.
I think you're forgetting that little section of panic we all experienced when we realized people were showing up to a panel.
So our first panel was the Thursday night panel, and I mean last year, like the Thursday night panel, obviously, because it's the least attended night and people are just busy kind of getting their bearings on what's at the convention, like not many people attend panels on Thursday night. They're too busy seeing what vendors are there, what celebrities are there, getting a layout of the place. So not a huge attendance for that one. And you know, I mean, we've done panels before and they'd be moderately attended. And you're right, Chris. We're doing the panels, the unproduced movie scripts.
Traditionally speaking, we've never done an entertainment panel. We always do comic book guys. And
it's just panels about comics with comic book guys.
I mean, they've all gone really well, but we haven't had that one that fills what feels like an auditorium. And this was that.
Well, and of course, we've done shows where we performed the scripts of unproduced Hollywood movies on this show twice. And we took some of the best scripts there, essentially, and we put them up. But this time, not only did we perform them, we got in a couple of people from outside, one actress. And her name is just escaping me.
Jennifer LeBlanc.
Thank you very much, Brett. And of course, Alexander Finbow, who's the editor and publisher from... Renegade Arts Entertainment, and so I mean, yeah, like, and then we got people from the audience to perform it, and yeah, I mean, there was like about a half hour before we're going in, there was this huge lineup, and it has the person at the back with the line saying I'm last in line, and every 2 seconds somebody else is taking the I am last in line and getting in line, and I looked at you guys, I said, guys, you realize that lineup right there, that's for us, and Keith goes, what? Like,
well, you're the one who tried to run away.
Oh yeah, I did not want to do it.
His dressing room. He was.
I didn't want to do it before people were showing up. But once people were showing up, I definitely didn't want to do it.
We had to double most fee for the day.
Yeah. Two screamers. No, sorry, four screamers.
Yeah, exactly. More like 10 screamers. But yeah, you had to have me there to do my excellent Nicolas Cage impression for the Superman live script, but I couldn't believe it. Like, we get in, people reading the scripts, people are laughing, people are jumping up to perform with us, and afterwards asking for autographs. It was a kick in the ass. I'm never doing it again.
We had that panel will be up soon enough, and it was about 200 people in the end that came out to that panel, maybe even north of 200.
I think it's crazy. The room holds 300. It was 80% full.
It was rock star time for us. It was really cool.
Actually, the room might hold more than that. The little room we did the now that I think about it, the little room that we did the draft panel in holds 136 people. This is at least three times that size, probably more.
Mo, I'm going to speak one more, and then you're going to say that essentially the entire.
I think probably somewhere. Okay, let's put it this way: WWE WrestleMania 3, in reality, had 76,000 people there, but they've been publishing, and then sitting in the world records that they had 93,173 for now 30 odd years. I'd like to do the same thing. I'd like to say we had 93,177, you include all of us at this panel.
Yeah, well, I think enough people on the panel. Yeah,
and there was enough people at the convention, you know, to that with that, you know,
that's
with
right.
102,000. Granted, every other other panel, everything else must have been dead.
That would mean that only 1,000 people came to the other days.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
That explains our panel attendance on the other days.
Those 1,000 people obviously just followed us around on the other days, is what they did.
We're not good at guesstimating, I'll be honest
with you. The point is that we had over 100,000 people there. And they really enjoyed it. And look at me and Brett had on the Wednesday night. Like we got off work and we spent 6 hours writing the scripts up, organizing them, picking them out, printing them off, stapling them together, highlighting the different parts, along with our other research and our other scripts, our draft script that we did. We worked our ass off to be ready for this one. So I'm glad it came off well. And that's why I'm never doing it again.
Mo has retired from panels and we appreciate his hard work.
I'm not retired from attending the con at all.
That's the time for you to go out, though, Mo. I mean, you were on top, undefeated champion, greatest Nicolas Cage impression I believe you won Alberta this time.
Certainly the best Nicolas Cage impression at the expo during that panel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least in the top three.
Top two, maybe. There's only two of us doing it. But, yeah. I wish there was video from that panel, actually. It's some funny stuff happening. Of course, this is when also on Saturday is when we interviewed Gerhard.
Yes. Man, you're never going to get that right, are you?
No.
I can't say
Matt Satori Griffith.
I had the pleasure of interviewing Gerhard. Gerhard was also on our art panel and fascinating guy, worked traditional for 20 years on Cerebus. And I don't think that Gerhard ever got the recognition he deserved on Cerebus. He's listed as background artist sometimes, environmental artist. Essentially, when you look at the later issues of that book, anything after about church and state, if it's not a character, Gerhard drew it. Their process was that Sim would do the layout of the page and draw the characters and hand the whole thing for Gerhard to do everything else. So I did great talk with him and, he was great on the panel. And then I came back to talk a bit more specifically about Cerebus. So I'll just go to that right now.
All right. We are at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. We're at the tail end of the show. It's starting to wind down. Gerhard, this is your first time at the Calgary Expo.
It is.
And how'd the show go for you?
Oh, it went wonderfully. I mean, it's a huge show, but it's very well run. The people here are great. The staff, the organizers, and the attendees have all just been top notch.
And you've been doing comic conventions since there almost wasn't even a name for them when you started doing comic conventions.
Right, well, no, it wasn't that long ago. They were still comic conventions. Yeah, they weren't. This was back in the days where you could still go to San Diego and not be overwhelmed by it, right? It was still the biggest show, but it's, you know, nothing like it is now. Being a small press, it's easy to get lost at the really big shows, right? So we tended to do the more regional shows.
Okay.
But Cerebus fans always seem to manage to find us. We always had a good time.
How many years is it now since Cerebus has wrapped up?
That was March 2004, so it's been, I can't do the math, it's the fourth day of the show. It was more than 10 years ago, I know that. Yeah.
Now, month in, month out, you got that, you guys got put that book out.
20 pages a month.
20 pages a month, no matter what. All right, so March 2004, you wrap up after doing 20 pages a month, rain or shine.
That's right.
So, was there a moment of... Are we doing an issue 301?
Oh, never. Never, ever, ever, not once, no. Never, not once, ever, no. Let me think. No. I don't know if I answered your question.
I, You were a bit evasive, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, well, okay, I'll try to be really? More. I'll try to be more forward and direct to the point.
So, as a creator, what was that moment? What was that day like where you sent off the last pages?
Surprisingly anticlimactic. It was good to get it out the door. It was a relief. But there was still this huge momentum of having maintained that schedule. I mean, we had to average a page and a half a day to stay on a monthly schedule, right? And I did that for 20 years. David did for even longer because he was self-publishing on his own at the beginning. And then there was all this stuff that we had been putting off for decades that we said, we'll do that once the book is done. So it was this mountain of work to do yet, right? So I just sort of applied that energy that I put into doing that page and a half a day, and I directed it toward all these things that had been put off. One of which was getting all the artwork together, because every time we got the artwork back from Prenny, the printer, we would just throw it in a closet or throw it, you know. It was all nicely wrapped up, we had bought an old house in Kitchener where we set up the studios and the offices, right? Because they demolished the building, the office building where we had the old studio and office. So in every cupboard and closet and nook and cranny that we could find that wasn't in the dank basement was just filled with pages, all out of order. You know, like I said, the individual issues were wrapped up, but they were all out of order, so they all needed to be cataloged and stored properly. And we're talking in the order of thousands, like something around 4,000 pages of 11.5 by 17.5 inch Bainbridge illustration board, which is a thick board, and one issue weighed, I don't know, 10 pounds. So,
and does that include all the back matter? Was that laid out? Was that all done in, as hard copies?
What do you mean by back matter?
All of, the letters pages and the...
Oh, no, no, that was pretty much, yeah, either just on the later days, just on the computer, okay. Right? Or, that was not a significant portion. It's the artwork that was this mountain of work that had to be then organized, and we signed every page. And then after they were signed, I found a way to store them properly, and so that was one of the tasks, and that was one of many that needed to be done. And then once that was done, I finally started winding down, but there was still this sense of, I need to do something. Shouldn't I be doing something? And then one day I realized the answer was no. And I think that's when I sort of curled up into a ball for 5 years.
I'm glad you're out of that ball now.
Yeah, it's good to be out again.
Now, how is you've built this? You and David have built a legacy of this work now. I mean, there was a lot of struggles and a lot of work and leadership, especially from the two of you, particularly in the 1980s,
right.
Creator rights and
right.
ownership of your work.
Right.
You were one of the signatories of the Creator's Bill of Rights.
Right.
Can you tell me a bit about that time?
Well, Dave spearheaded all of that, of course. That was his vision, and he just saw the injustices that had been done to the older creators, right, with not having the rights to the artwork or being able to own physically their artwork. And so all these creators who basically created and designed the characters that this whole industry is based on got the shaft. And Dave was bound and determined that that wasn't going to happen to him, and he did his level best to make sure that everybody knew about it and that it didn't have to happen to anyone else either. That you had the choice and you had the right to retain the rights to your work. And he crusaded that campaign practically single-handedly.
What do you think is the legacy of that work that this group was doing at that time?
Image Comics, for one. I mean, there was the whole... The Turtles guys, Kevin and Peter, self-published their book because we were doing that. That's what we were doing, right? So, and of course, we all know what happened with that story. And then that led to the black and white explosion in the whatever that was, late 80s, early 90s, right? Yeah. Where just everybody and their cousin thought that they could publish a book that had radioactive hamsters in it or something, and that they would make $1 million. And then, of course, reality sets in, and people realize that that's not the case.
Talking animal books never last.
No, yeah. But especially when they're just a ripoff of the name of the turtles. I mean, you have to have some substance to base it on, right? But I think people like Jeff Smith and Bone, and I'm blanking out because this is the last day of the show, and I'm surprised I can string three sentences together. But I'm sure you can come up with plenty of examples of creators who managed to do their vision and retain the rights to their work and their artwork as well.
And you're doing a lot of commissions at the show. You do commissions. Is that your primary work now?
Now it is, yeah. I'm still not quite ready to jump into the monthly schedule thing again. I mean, if the right project came along, I think I would be interested. But right now I'm primarily doing commissions through my website, GerhardArtArt.com, and where you can get my email address and check out my blog. And, yes, so people just contact me with all sorts of great ideas, and we just work out a size and price, and then I do my thing, and I have yet to have a dissatisfied customer.
Now, there was talk at one point that when you finish service, you would swap the pages, odd numbers would go to one, and even numbers would go
Dave,
to two.
Oh, Dave figured that since there was no viable or way to split up the artwork, it would just be a page for you, a page for me, a page for you, a page for me. Dave had a lot of unique ideas over the course of our working relationship, and more often than not, they panned out. But that one right from the top didn't sound like it was very workable to me. He has no interest in selling any of the artwork. He's trying to maintain the Cerebus archive and keep as much artwork in the archive as possible. So we came up to a different arrangement where I basically took possession of the pages that I did all or most of the work on. And he was good with that, I'm good with that. And so we take it from there.
All right, Gerhard, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your work.
Well, thank you.
Your contribution to Canadian comics. That is, it means a lot to us on the show, the work of that's done in the Canadian community. And thanks for coming to the Calgary Expo. How can people give you money? That's the most important thing.
Well, they can contact you. Try that again. They can contact. Oh, see, it's the last day of the show. They can contact me through my website, which is GerhardArt.com. That's GerhardArt, GerhardArt.com. And my email contact form is on there. And we can work out commissions, or you can just send me money. That's good, too. I have a PayPal account. I'll let you know the email address. Just send me money.
Thanks so much for your
Thank
time.
You.
All right. Again, thanks to Gerhard for taking the time. It was a crazy day. There is a break about partway through that interview where Brett will have to do a little fancy edit because I have a policy that I do not keep talking when folks come up to give artists money. And that's how I get second interviews. So Gerhard did send me a note afterward that I wanted to append to this interview. When he was talking to me about the way they were trying to work out the split on the artwork after Cerebus ended, they had talked about a page for you, page for me. So Gerhard sent me this note to clarify. I was supposed to give Dave a cut of any page I sold based on the amount of work he had done on that page. So I had to try to determine what a fair percentage would be and hand that over, whereas Dave is not selling any of his pages. So I get no percentage from that. It didn't seem fair. The pages I have now are mine to do with as I see fit. I owe him no percentage, and I make no further claim to the remainder of the pages that are in his possession, which is the vast majority. Gerhard told me it was about 450 pages out of the approximately 4,000 that they still had of the Cerebus. At a certain point, they stopped selling the pages. They sold them early on in the 80s, but had stopped. So Gerhard has those. He makes prints of them. He's deciding what to do with the physical pages, though. and visit his website. He does commission work as well.
Yeah, and he was, you know, you hear the stories about Dave Sim being somewhat of a cantankerous, grumpy fellow at times, and so you kind of think maybe he's going to be like that too. Couldn't be a friendlier, nicer, more humble guy, and there's a chance that maybe you'll get him on the phone some point down the road, and talk to him some more, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I've talked to Gerhard. As I said, we've had communication since the expo, and he is a great guy. We're talking about doing a longer piece with him.
Excellent.
You were saying he's nicer than we thought he'd be, and seeing him on the art panel, I just wanted to call him Uncle Gerhard by the end. he was that kind of personality that just sort of sucks you in and kind of makes you love him a little bit.
Yeah.
He was terrific. And I brought over a couple of things for him to autograph, and he wanted to talk about what they were and when he worked on them. There was a comic book, Legal Defense Fund book that he worked on, he signed for me, and his partner was there with him, and she said, you know, did you do this cover? And he said, yeah, I did the dragon on this cover. It's Cerebus killing a dragon. And then they were reminiscing about all of these sketches from, you know, his high school years when he drew dragons in high school. Just like an incredibly sweet guy.
So then we moved on from there, and there was another panel this time also by Brett, through Alex Finbo of Renegade Arts Entertainment, and had on our buddy Riley Rossmo, of course, who's Rasputin, and also got a little thing called Hellblazer there for DC that he's working on that looks unreal, and Jim Zub. My only thoughts on this panel that I'll say, I can't wait for people to listen to it, is about how to get into the business. There's a moment where somebody literally does crash the panel, and I wanted to commit violence on them. But my biggest takeaway from this is, boy, Zup has a foul mouth.
That he does. But at the same time, he is fabulous. He is possibly the greatest font of knowledge that we have in the comic industry today.
Yeah, he's awesome.
That guy can talk, and he is extraordinarily interesting. So it's well worth a listen.
It is well worth a listen. When you guys will put that up soon too. Any other thoughts, Brett, hosting it?
Well, you know, I didn't think that I'd have to do much work. I mean, I kind of figured what Jim would be like, and Jim was exactly what I expected him to be. So really, I mean, it was just kind of like sit back, prepare a few questions. I think the only thing that I expected was I did expect the audience to have more questions. They really didn't have any. And once the guy stood up and kind of crashed the panel, so to speak, and started spamming everybody in the audience, I pretty much just shut down the questions. So it was a good thing that the Jim was there.
Yeah, that's true.
It was pretty funny that the panel had just told him not to do what he was doing if you ever want to work in the industry, and then he does it.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was a guy who wanted to, instead of find out how to break into the industry, pretty much had a book that he wanted to promote and just got up there and started promoting it and refused to give the mic back to Brett. And the worst part is it was like a comic book cookbook, no bullshit. He actually is doing that. It was a comic book cookbook. It's a really odd idea. And yeah, I mean, if you want to sell it to everybody, you think you're getting the publicity and getting it out there to the people. You made everybody so mad in that room, you have zero chance of having one sale. So it's so stupid and counterproductive. It's just unbelievable.
Well, not to mention he didn't have a product to sell in the first place. He was just trying to get the book made.
No, it sounded like it was in production to me. So what's the way I
thought he said he wanted an artist.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
he did
say that.
Only someone ever recorded it.
Either way, I already think we're talking about him way too much.
Yeah, I was about to ask if you could, like, before you put up that episode, can you bleep him out so that he doesn't get any press from?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Nobody is going to find out his name.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody will find out his name. Yeah, but the story is kind of funny because he's going to do a comic book cookbook. Yeah, that's money.
There's going to be a 3 TV shows based on that in 5 years. And
I'm going to feel like an idiot.
we had that guy on the show. And Keith made him bleep it out.
So then we went around and I think we got some food, and then there was another panel, right?
That's right.
We didn't stop doing panels, really. We got to do a panel, actually. This was like the first panel we submitted this year. It was the one we wanted the most. The Calgary Comic Creator panel.
We should mention that, Keith, that we submitted like 5-6 panels, whatever, thinking we might get one or two.
Yeah, we put in 5.
Instead we ended up with all of them, which was exhausting.
Next year we will have more faith in our submissions. That said, I don't know which one I want to cut. They were all so much fun.
I know. I can't think of a good reason per se to cut any of them.
I'm cutting all 6.
I think actually we only submitted 4 because Brett was asked to moderate the one for Renegade, and I was asked to moderate the art panel.
Yeah, technically I did submit the Renegade one though.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
The listeners
were on the edge of their seats.
Yeah, I know, exactly. All right, move along.
We submitted 5, we got all 5, and next year, at least I'm particularly taking part in not only being on them, but even organizing them. I mean, probably won't go to the... If I mention I'm never going to another expo. That's it, I'm done, I'm out. This was a lot of work, I'm exhausted. I had you talk about your expo hangover? It was like 3 days, all I could say was, ugh. I was
done. You shouldn't have worked on the Monday, man, that was the problem.
Yeah, well, I have so much vacation time.
Until midweek, I insisted that every meeting at work be held with everyone at the meeting sitting in a line in front of microphones. And then the rest of the office had to come in and listen to it. joke only worked for Chris. So I'm back on my regular speed of entertaining one person at a time.
So now the art panel... it was the local creators panel, as you mentioned. That's the
local
last
creators,
one.
And that'll also, of course, also be going up as an episode. Just recently discovered that a local artist, Sam Hester, she does what's called, what does she call
panel
it?
Panel one member, Sam Hester.
Yeah, and she does visual notes, sketch notes, she calls them. And I didn't realize she did one of that panel.
Wow.
Brett, you're
somebody
in it. I'm
there.
In it.
Oh, really?
There writing. I didn't know that was her. Like I saw somebody was there doing art, and I thought it was. I thought it might have been another panel one member, Nick Greasy. Looked a little bit like the picture of her, but that was Sam. Okay, excellent. I went to her. I literally went to her booth like as many times as you went to Garth Ennis and never caught her. It was unbelievable. I really wanted to meet Sam. So panel one, if you haven't mentioned, is a coalition with a website of just community of Calgary artists who are helping to promote and help each other create and have a sense of belonging and community and everything like that that is out there and a good source for people to check out some of the good work these people are doing, both independents and within the professionals. So anyway, so that's great. She was there. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so Sam has that was put up on her Twitter. Brett is represented on there. I'm on there. She's done little sketches of us. Stephen, Rick, Scott, Aaron, and Justin and Nick, Chris Peterson, who we gave a shout out to, are all represented. And the idiom that is going to catch on, like you'll all be saying this soon enough, a whole other kettle of wax.
You know, the worst part is...
So you're
is
saying
that
I'm not represented on there?
You're not going to... You didn't want to sit on the panel.
But I introduced the panel.
She has me saying welcome.
Yeah, so but
I
you mean, weren't on mic.
Who are you going to trust, your memory or what Sam drew?
Good point. It'll definitely be what Sam drew.
But you know the worst part, Keith, about your stupid kettle of wax? is that I have wound up... almost using that like 3 times. Like it's just like, oh, thanks for giving me kettle of wax, you Tim bastard.
Yeah, it was a fun interview. A lot of people on it, so it's a little hard to, you know, when you have that many people to engage them all and get to know everybody, and then talk a little bit about some of the other creators that aren't even on there that are within the city, because there's so many people in this city making comic books. I mean, as much as probably any city, similar city of its size, anywhere in North America. It's a very vibrant community. And yeah, really good panel. It unfortunately was taking place at the same time as the costume contest, which drew a massive crowd. And I think that hurt attendance a little bit, but we appreciate everybody who came, and we're sure you're all going to enjoy it and need to check out these people's books.
Absolutely. And before we go to what we did in that evening, on the Saturday evening, because that was a big night, let's do one more interview.
Let's go right to the evening.
Why not? Yeah. I love when Mo tells me on the host and then immediately takes over, because it saves me time actually preparing.
That just wasn't my vision. So let's go right to the evening. Let's not go to an interview. Let's go right to the evening. What happened next? It just flows so nicely. The interview doesn't. It's not part of the same.
So
world.
after the local creator panel, and now the local creators following our Comic Creator Summit in December, which is available on the website, all three of them are on our We Talk podcast. And after that, a few of the creators thought that they weren't getting together in any kind of regularity. There was no even semi-formal community. Just some people knew some people.
Sort of.
Mo, why don't you tell the origin story of panel one?
I thought he did.
I want to tell the origin story of panel one, because I've already kind of given into that, what it is.
Have another 4 hours. I mean,
I've already kind of gotten into what that is. The point is that one of the goals of panel one is to make sure that there are regular gatherings of comic book people working in the industry or trying to get into the industry, hopes to do their own shows, workshops, signings, everything. Like I say, it's about the community being more socially aware and within themselves and within the city of Calgary, and hopefully in doing so, raising awareness and helping creativity. And one of the things is that Alexander Finbo, who is a panel one member, we mentioned before, really wanted to have a prose night where the comic book people could gather, because that has there's been drink and draws or different things, but they've been very small attended, or people split off into other areas. He said, or people have done this in the past, but they've gone. It's been because a band is playing here in Calgary, and people can't talk, you can't network, you can't get to know anybody and share war stories. So he had a vision for it. So Aaron at panel one and myself helped to organize an evening. Aaron, of course, where she walks and is, the heartbeat of panel one, Aaron Miller. We managed to throw it all together, trying to keep it quiet like Alexander wanted to. He was worried about fans showing up, which could have been a worry. We booked a place, and we expected about 30 people. We had booked it for 50. We got nearly double that.
Nearly double 30 or 50?
50.
Both.
Nearly double 50.
Really?
Yeah. Nearly. We got about three times the 30. Last word of the headcount was around 90 people, which makes it, as far as gatherings of just a party of comic book people being together and creating, one of the largest, I think, probably that has been held that I know of, certainly.
It was something Alex said to me at the end of the night, was that, I said, Calgary creators don't get together like this. And he said, aside from Emerald City, comic creators don't get together like this, period. He said it doesn't happen in San Diego. It doesn't happen in New York, because they break off into company parties, and there were no companies at Calgary Expo, none of the big companies anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a great thing to see. You had people like our independent creators, people just breaking in. There's a gentleman, I can't remember his name, but we met earlier that day, working on a graphic novel. He has a movie called Sharkosaurus, working on a graphic novel for it. And a good young publishing company called Terrible Inc. that's working on a very interesting project. And to be able to bring them together where you had people like from Calgary, like Chris Peterson and Kurt Pierce who are working professionally for companies like Boom and Dark Horse and everything like that. And then at the same time, you had like a Vic Malhotra, of course, of Image, who's also here in Canada. But you also had people like John Bolton, you know, all the way from England over here. You had Rob Venditti there. You had people like Stephen Charles Rosea of Muskoka talking to telling, you know, who they are in creative stories with someone like Rob Venditti, who's doing Exo Manowar and The Flash and Green Lantern. It's just super cool.
It was a fantastic night. Like so many cool stories, great conversations. Really cool for Rob and Scott, who are both doing work at DC, to connect up.
They had never met each other. You know, they got a chance to meet Scott Qualtron. Last word I heard was five projects have spun out of it.
Wow,
which is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah. While we're name dropping, just before the show. Probably you guys haven't heard this. It was Chris Peterson and Kurt Pierce, who are working on a new book of Black Mask, have announced that comic Mayday has been optioned for TV.
That is spectacular. I'm so happy to hear that. That's everything that we want these people to have, is the ultimate success that they deserve. They're just so talented and hardworking. That's so great. They represent this city so well.
Now we all had great stories that night. Mo, you started it off, and I joined in quite energetically pitching Rob Venditti a character that we'd like
Rob
to see.
Rob Venditti, I've been teasing him on his, you know, when we interviewed him, asking if he knew the character Goldface, because he's writing Green Lantern. That was a fairly well-known, villain in the 80s and 70s for Green Lantern, because he was gold, essentially yellow, and Green Lantern couldn't fight that. So I mean, but nowadays it's you know, a character that doesn't serve much purpose. So he brought him back for me in the Future's End. Just he had one line and a little place in the panel, and he kind of did that
zombie,
for me.
But, you know.
Yeah, it was a zombie, and you know what? Like that's awesome. And there's a couple other things that Rob has done for like me and Brett that are kind of Easter eggs that just we would get, which is really just cool of him because he's such a good guy. And so anyways, now the Goldface was in there. At some point in time, I brought up Airwave. Keith, why don't you take it over from here?
So Mo mentions Airwave
I'm telling him that's the next character now after Goldface. You got to bring back Airwave.
What Mo did not know when he mentioned Airwave, because I mean, Mo was really thinking of kind of the Silver Age Airwave. What he didn't know is that when I was a kid, one of the first superheroes that I read was the post DC explosion version of Airwave, who was a kid superhero and was being mentored by Green Arrow, Green Lantern, and Black Canary.
I'm pretty sure the one I was also a kid superhero, because that was the one that used to skate on the with roller skates on the.
I don't know how old he was supposed to be, because I mean,
I think he was a teenager as well.
Well, and he's supposed to be
the phone wires or whatever.
He's supposed to be the parent of the second version of the one that was introduced in the early 80s. It was the 8-page backups in Action Comics. So some of the first comics I read.
And that's also where I believe I first discovered him too, though.
So yeah, we both got really excited. We're showing Rob pictures of Airwave, who's a terribly designed character. He's
horrible.
Almost entirely green with a yellow cape. All of his powers are tied to all of his powers are tied to 40-year-old technology.
So you're saying Vision with roller skates?
No, more of a pale green, like not a tough guy ugly green like he's got now. Early Vision maybe. But yes, and then we were relentless after that.
Yeah, you got to bring him back, especially when you mentioned that his relationship to both Oliver Queen and Hal Jordan
And I'm not 100% sure I had that right. I mean, I had had a lot of Jamesons at that point. He was Hal Jordan's nephew. I'm not sure if it was a relation to Green Arrow, but he was being mentored by all three of those characters. And and in a branding decision that Rob just couldn't wrap his mind around, the 1980s version of Airwave was also called Hal Jordan.
Which really kind of pissed him off. Like, how could they do that? That's the dumbest thing I ever heard. He's also Hal Jordan.
Yeah, he was Harold Hal Jordan, named after his uncle. Rob at one point said that he wanted to go into the Dan DiDio's office and just straight faced pitch his Airwave revamp book and see how far he would go. But he kind of chickened out when he realized that there is a slim chance the book would be accepted and he'd be writing.
Yeah, he's just basically like, okay, he said, I'm going to go into his office. I'm going to sit him down and go, okay, Airwave. Right. And then he goes, and then I'm just going to keep talking. Just see how long until he breaks. And then, like you say, then he started to realize that he might actually end up doing this character. But then again, the way we were relentless on him, I'm hoping to see him still in some fashion. Even if it's just another Easter egg, you know, even if it's just another Easter egg in a piece of dialogue for us. But that was a lot of fun. I mean, Rob's, you know, a great guy. And early in the day when we were at the Valiant booth where Rob was, because Rob didn't bring his own stuff and he didn't have his own booth. He was just hanging out at Valiant. And Chris had come over and there's a new Ninjak book there that Chris looked at. And Chris has a hate on for this character, Ninjak.
How could I not have a hate on for this character? He's a purple ninja.
And that seems to be the crux of your reason for hatred. And so Chris goes on and tells him what a terrible character that is and how nobody should ever do that character. And this was at the Valiant booth. So that night, there's a point where Rob looks at him and goes, okay, so Ninjak. And Chris goes off. Somebody want to pick it up from here?
It's worth noting, by the time this was brought up, I think I was on pint number 6 of Guinness.
Yeah. This is true.
Apparently that's the end of the
story.
Even
sober, right? you were definitely saying it. Oh, yeah. You went off on this character.
Chris stuck to his guns. I will give total credit to Chris that he's looking at a guy that has been paid to write Ninjak and is still not going to compromise. There's no turning back. He hates Ninjak. He doesn't care who knows it, including a guy who's written him professionally.
Yeah, the guy who brought him back as a character into the Valiant universe. Though Chris is sitting there going, and he's purple? Pretty much every sentence with that. No, at one point he does go, and his name is Ninjak. That's a stupid name. And Rob goes, well, actually, that is a pretty stupid name. It was awesome. But Chris just goes on and on and on about it. So night, Chris brings up something else. He also brings up Dog Welder to Rob, and he has to explain Dog Welder to him, how he wants him back. Rob may work at DC, but he has no clue about this character. But there's a point where Chris says something else, and I just think Rob's had enough. Right, because Rob was laughing his ass off during the whole Ninjak thing, but I just figure he's had enough because he looks at Chris and he goes, "Well, you know, that's the thing in this world. So there's some people who understand how to write comic books." He looks directly at Chris and really loudly says, "And some people don't." And the whole table gets quiet. And Rob looks at him and goes, "I'm fucking with you." It was the greatest, most amazing. We all just busted up. And then he's like, no, seriously, I was just screwing around. Just tremendous.
Oh man, what a night.
The ones who left early, we left about 11 because we had more stuff to do on Sunday, more panels and stuff, but
and more paper to print morning. Off
We really did. Yeah,
we could be at the convention bright and early on Sunday to do stapling.
He had to lug that around the rest of the weekend, even though we didn't need it. I felt guilty for that.
I know. Yeah. I thought about setting up a table just to sell that stupid thing. carried it.
Almost as big as your thumb. How could you possibly carry it?
Yeah, I do want to say, Mo and Brett, I know that you know, you guys had done the interview with Rob. Thanks so much for setting up both of those events.
Rob, there. All good.
That was,
of course, we're going to have you there. Wonderful. The only reason you weren't in on the Rob thing is because when you're interviewing somebody and you really want to get in depth, it's tough when you have, you know, too many people on. But of course, you guys are going to be there. You're our buddies and you're our co-hosts. The next morning, first thing we did was that interview. First thing that happened is Sunday morning, we did this interview that we had done on Friday with Jay Lee.
Is there a point in the interview where Jay Lee actually says, and you, when you get to the Friday of the convention, is there a point that's really important?
If you guys thought that the Garth Ennis thing was odd, and certainly Chris going, I got nothing, you know, when he says it's time for another question after his first one doesn't go well, is an awkward moment. This was my favorite moment of the whole convention. Not that panel one party, not the rock star treatment at the Scripps panel. My favorite moment the entire convention is Brett's screw up here, his blooper in the Star Stardust interview. I don't want to give any more away. I just walk away because I was laughing so hard, and I'm pounding the wall down like about 30 feet away now because I'm just laughing so hard. I'm trying to get control of myself so I can get back to the interview, but it's awesome. We're huge Jay Lee fans, as Brett will prove early on.
I got to tell you, this is a real honor because for a very long time, Jay Lee, you have been my favorite author, favorite artist. I'm already geeked out, but we really appreciate you coming on. And so you're right now doing Inhumans. Are you still?
No.
No, okay.
I did that back in 1998.
Oh.
Or 96 or so.
Wow, did I?
Inhumans?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was just reading that, that's why. Yeah. I'm already having a good day.
You're such a big fan. You don't follow my career. Yeah. You don't know what I'm working on.
I know. Now, you know, the funny thing is that I have the Hellshot card, the world's largest Hellshot card in my house, and that's kind of my like my honor with your career. But I'm really sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
It's up to here, that card.
Yeah, it really is. Anyways,
it's probably 1994.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Tell the audience what you are working on.
Well, currently I'm not working on anything. I just finished up a run on Batman Superman.
That's where I was going
at. Yeah. Right now I'm just doing a bunch of covers for DC. I'm working on a new project, but it hasn't been announced yet, so I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Fair enough. So I will get this, a lot of covers in your career. What's the difference between doing covers versus doing the interior art?
Well, there's a lot more pressure with covers. Some people think it's easier because it's just one single image versus multiple images on a page. But it can take a long time to compose that one shot. It has to be essentially the perfect shot, something that's going to sell the book. So the pressure is on you to do a good job. Whereas when you do the interiors, it's a lot more forgiving. The pressure is spread out over 22 pages, and if you draw something that you're not happy with, it's okay because there's a lot of other images to distract the reader, but the cover just has to be perfect.
Is there a psychology to doing the cover where you sit there and you go, okay, this is the image, it's got to be laid out in this way in order to grab the people's eyes in a certain way? And how much forethought is put into the image before you put it up to the page?
Well, the first thing I take into consideration is what the editor wants. He will usually tell me, he or she will tell me the concept, the kind of shot they have in mind sometimes, and then I draw some sketches. And there's not any set way of doing things because every editor works differently. Some editors will be more descriptive in what they want, and others will just say, I want a shot of Batman, do what you want.
Is that preferred? Do you like that more when it's do what you want, or do you want a little direction?
I want a little direction if it's something I like drawing. But if they say, let's have Batman fighting 50 different characters, then, you know what, I wish I could have come up with my own concept.
So, do opportunities like Batman, Superman come up for you? And if so, like, would you take more of them, or would you prefer to go working on your own stuff again?
I loved working on Batman, Superman. The opportunity to work on two of the biggest characters in comics was a true honor. So I don't know if I'll be offered a project of that caliber again. And I miss doing it. We'll see what happens next. And again, I can't say what it is, but I think with every new project I take on, I put 100% into it and make that the project that I'm most excited about.
So now your style is very distinctive. Is that like one of the reasons for your longevity, is because you have a style that people can tell and really appreciate? Has there been any roadblocks because of the darker elements of it?
Well, to evolve as an artist is the most important element, I think, because if you stay with the same style, do the same thing that I've been doing for the past 25 years, I'd be bored, you'd be bored, everyone would be bored. So I have to change it up. Usually because it's not because of outside forces, someone saying to change it, it's what I impose upon myself. I get tired of working in particular styles and I want to try something new. And going the route of choosing a darker style, there have been roadblocks. There are certain jobs that I'm not considered for because my style doesn't fit. And that's where I have to give DC Comics credit. They put me on books that I have to, honestly, I'm surprised. Like, I didn't think I'd be put on a book like Superman, Batman, or even Ozymandias. But because I was given a book that wasn't dark, wasn't the usual horror, doesn't have the usual horror element that I'm associated with, it made me change my style and want to do something brighter. And I enjoyed working on it.
Now, first time I think we remember each of us seeing your art, we pick up an issue of John Byrne's writing it, pick up an issue of Namor, is the energy that jumps off the page that really impressed us. But your style has changed greatly since then. So when is it you kind of felt comfortable yourself with, okay, this is who I am as an artist?
I don't think I'll ever feel comfortable. If I feel comfortable, then I get bored. It's always a challenge. Yeah.
So now, what kind of style? Like, are you working primarily manually, like with pens, paper, or are you working digitally at all?
I do everything by hand. All the line work is done old school. I pencil it. Sometimes I ink it, but if it's digitally inked, then I'll pencil it really tight. I work with my wife, who's my colorist, but she also inks my work on occasion. So, like Batman Superman was inked digitally. Everything I've done in the past, I think, I'd say 6 years has been inked digitally. And occasionally, on some covers, I'll ink it myself. And depending on my mood that day, that's how I determine what I want to do.
One last question here. You know, bit line up as you should. But if you were to tell somebody to check out your art, if you have somebody book, which book is it?
Well, I'd say go to jleeart.com and you'll see some of my best pieces, the pieces that I'm most proud of, and pieces I will probably never be able to replicate or match.
All right.
Awesome. Jay Lee, thank you.
Check out Hellshock anyways. Lots of love. Hellshock number 2, honestly, I will tell you right now, I remember a friend of mine getting it. We all bought it. We loved Hellshock number 1, but there was an evolution Hellshock number 2. Picked up that issue. our friend Keith, who's not here, but part of this group, We Talk Podcast, I remember saying to me, that's the new Sandman. And we thought the quality was that high, and obviously that's, you know, one of the best books I've ever written. So, real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Oh, one more thanks time. A lot. It's been an honor, guys. Thank
Jay
you.
Lee.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this.
Okay, Brett, now we're back. So, defend yourself.
Well, you know, I mean, in fairness, I think it's important to know everything that worked on. It's only up to 1998, though. No, I had just been reading some Inhumans. It was what was stuck in my brain at that moment, and that was what came out. I knew exactly that I was, you know, what I was looking for, but no. Did that come out? Not a chance.
The thing is, you got to understand is, Brett starts going, and the latest thing you're working on, Inhumans. And I was thinking, you know, like, I don't know, he's just doing Batman, Superman. He's just finished up on that. And so I get this look on my face like, did he start working on Inhumans and I missed it? I'm like, does he did a follow-up? Is he working on it now and I missed it and I missed the announcement? I'm pissed at myself. And then I look over at Jay Lee's face. And then Jay Lee goes, worked on that in 1998. And the look of confusion on this man's face, like, he's sitting there thinking, have I been working on Inhumans this year? I forgot. Like, it was.
It's like, I do a lot of stuff. I mean,
see, I that, you can keep that's, track. That's what I should have played it. I should have played it that he was wrong.
Well, that's what Chris would have done. That's what Chris did when it was it Dan Barretton? You accused
yeah, that
of
was,
doing
a... that was Dan Bratman. I got into a fight whether he worked on a book or not.
Just stick
and
to
you
your
told
guns.
Him he didn't, and he told you he didn't, and you insisted he did because yep. You would know better than him.
No, it doesn't go down well either way. Actually, there's no way he can save a situation like that.
But Brett, at least you're not alone.
That's right.
This was not an interview. Oh, it's so. But you had just sucked up to him right beforehand so much too. He's a big fan. He's the greatest. He's Jay Lee, you know. But what a sweetheart, though.
Well, it turns out that we're all capable of our geek moments.
Oh, I it won't be on this, but in the We Talk Wrestling podcast, it starts with Trish Stratus. I had a moment to talk with Trish Stratus and Lita, and at the very beginning. Lita is, you know, I'll be told that she'll only do it with Trish because she's shy, and they're doing it. I put the recorder down at the table, and they both get down. They're like a half inch from it, you know, and they're talking like, "Are we supposed to talk down here?" I'm like, "Should I get my face down there with you too?" And they looked at me like I was the creepiest guy ever. I'm like, "Oh, that's not good." And then Lita's real name is Amy Dumas, but it's spelled. It has an S at the end, so I pronounced it Amy Dumas. And then Trish Stratus said, do it again, you screwed that up, otherwise people are going to be like, what the, you know, and I was like, and I pronounced her name Trish Stratus correctly, but this time I thought I'd be really funny and clever, so I pronounced Lita's name Amy Dumas and Trish Strada, and let's just say that this didn't go over very well.
Well, it could have been worse. At least you could thinking. At least you didn't say Amy Dumas or something.
No, but I just looked at them. I went, no. And Trish just looks at me and goes, no. Very serious. It's like, oh, shit. After that, I just started, it like broke free and started, you know, went clear and was a really good interview. But yeah, everybody can have that moment.
Much like the Jay Lee, which was very good after that point.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. Yeah, actually, one of the things is I expected when we were talking to him about you having that huge-ass Hellshock card that's so incredibly rare, I thought he would be impressed by that. He was like, he didn't give a shit.
He didn't give a shit about Hellshock, I noticed.
No, he really didn't. That kind of got me.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, he really wasn't. Like, we were raving about Hellshock. I even mentioned how you had talked about how when the second volume came out, Keith, at the time, I remember... You read the first issue and you said to me, that's the new Sandman. And you and I were working at the same place at the time. And yeah, he really wasn't as interested in it as I thought. So that just blew my mind.
There were, to be fair, there were an enormous amount of gas fumes at that place. We were.
Why? Gas station. But yeah. Yeah. All right.
Not as prone to hyperbole as I used to be, apparently.
So we had the last panel. This is a panel. It's a draft panel. The concept was basically we got six people on the panel, and we asked them to take existing characters and creators and draft a universe that they would like to publish. If they own Dark Horse or Marvel or whatever, so they could end up with Captain America and the Joker and have Frank Miller writing them, like that type of thing. Who would draft the right character? What's the right strategy and different things? And I tried to do this as a podcast, thinking we could do this as a podcast and a series of blogs saying what books creators would put on the book and what people you would put in a team and to create your Justice League and stuff. Afterwards, I thought it'd be a lot of fun. And for years now, for over 2 years, I've been pushing this, and Keith's been saying to me, this will never work. And Chris has been saying, I don't get it. And, I felt justified because we did it. It went great. Crowd loved it. They participated. It completely worked. And Keith, you walked up to me afterwards and you started bowing. And I thought, hey, score one for the bad guy.
I am proud to say that Chris still doesn't get it. So it's,
oh, come on. I get it. It worked.
Oh, come on. Your team drafted was awesome. Just awesome.
Chris drafted two.
No spoilers for what's in the show, because we will be posting this one as an episode.
Right,
as well.
I can't say.
Yeah, but don't give away too much. Don't give away who wins for God's sake.
No, we won't do that. But
that's 45 minutes of gold.
Crowd did pick a winner, but Chris, basically, Chris, if you took a character that's like a cartoon character known for humor, Chris would draft a creator that is known for a dark and gritty world. Put him on that book and make it and make no sense.
In Chris's defense, he did exactly what I do when I'm doing my Oscar poll right before the Oscars. I pick them based on my heart. Chris picked his based on his heart. He did not play the room.
No, he certainly did not.
I did okay.
You did great. It was awesome. It was tons of fun. And I love the fact that you did it.
Chris did come. Like, without saying too much, Chris was in the top five.
Yeah, that's right. He did make the top five, so we're impressed. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, Keith, you did our last interview. I think you actually did this one on Friday, right?
I did this one on Wednesday when move-in was happening for the convention. Okay. It is with old friend of the show. I interviewed him last year at the Calgary convention. He's been at the show for 3 or 4 years running now. Ray Fox, Canadian treasure, Toronto writer, artist. Since the last time we talked to him, his graphic novel, The People Inside came out, which was my pick at the Wee Talkies, the Kryptonite Awards for graphic novel of last year. And he's got a new book from Image, which just hit number 6, called Intersect, which everyone should be reading. So this is my interview, really focusing on those two works.
We are at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo, and I'm here with Ray Fox. Ray, this is how many years in a row have you been at the show?
I think I've been here 5 years in a row. Maybe even more than that. I can't even remember anymore.
What keeps you coming back to this show? I mean, there's a lot of options, certainly. Most years there's another show on this weekend that's quite a large convention.
You know, the Calgary Expo, I find the fans are so enthused here and so numerous that I can't resist coming back. It's really, really cool. I also don't get out to this part of Canada very often, so it is very nice to come here once a year and see the locals.
You're doing a lot more commissions this year than you usually do.
Yeah, I think a lot more people are aware that I'm an artist as well in the last couple of years, now that they're seeing work in books like Intersect or The Spectral Engine. And so, I'm kept pretty busy. My drawing arm is going to need an icing.
Let's talk a little bit about Intersect. This is your new book from Image. Issue 6 comes out this week. You had all 6 issues at the convention. I noticed they're not on the table now.
Yeah, they were sold out, happily. Intersect is my horror book, and it's also a puzzle book, but really, it's about people who are changing shape uncontrollably for mysterious reasons, and I wanted to do the kind of story where the readers are dropped into it, where nothing is spelled out for them easily from the start. I find that there are a lot of novels like that, a lot of great movies like that that I really love, movies like Memento or Mulholland Drive, but not a lot of comics that successfully do that. And so I wanted to see, you know, with my strange urge to experiment, I wanted to see if it was possible in a comic. And Intersect seems to be generating a pretty good response, so I think it's working.
And this is this your first time doing a monthly where you're doing the art?
Yeah, actually, it's my first time doing a monthly. Normally, I do graphic novels, which means sitting alone quietly in your studio for a year and a half while everybody says, are you working on anything? But I decided to go for the monthly this time, and it's a totally different thing. The schedule is grueling, but it's really neat to see people react month after month to the book.
Now, you're also using a different art style than you have on many of your graphic novels with Intersect.
Yeah, I tend to do that, don't I? I change things up one book to the next. I really wanted to paint a book, and Intersect was the opportunity to do it. So I just cut loose with the watercolors, and I'm really pleased with how it's turning out.
It is a very different style. So what, including watercolors, what other media are you using?
For Intersect or in general?
For Intersect.
For Intersect, it's almost exclusively watercolor, but I mean, I do throw in the occasional bit of acrylic paint or some ink or pencils. I think there's a little bit of sandpaper involved. Really anything, literally anything within my reach.
Now, there's a passage at the end of issue 5 of Intersect.
Yeah.
Now, we're all familiar with comics that have the story so far right inside the front cover. Many of the big companies do it. Image books do. Remind you where you are in the story. Intersect number 5 has the story thus far at the end of the issue.
Yes. Well, Intersect number 5 actually has multiple story so far entries. And at the end of that issue, there is one particular one, which people always want to talk to me about now, which doesn't describe the story of the book, but describes the story of the experience of reading the book. It's maybe a little bit of flim-flam on my part, but you were meant to come to a certain point and then read that entry and hopefully be shaken up by it. And I have had some people say that they were. So a horror book that achieves what it's after, I like it.
I certainly got to that section, looking at the pace of the book. And, of course, I mean, you do have that trying to find the key that unlocks the whole thing. And that passage really tells you, you know, will you be happy if you find that?
Well, I mean, to me, you know, one of the things that's key about horror is the notion that even what you want may not be what you want when you get it. You know what I'm saying? And so, and that comes up a lot in horror. A lot of the Japanese horror stories I really love deal with people getting what they thought they were after and then paying for it. And I wanted to give the readers a moment that was, you know, not only would they experience the horror of the story, but I actually wanted to give them a moment that was slightly horrifying in real life, if possible. And I think it works.
And the first 6 issues finishes off the arc. When's the trade out?
The trade is out at the end of May, I believe. Don't 100% quote me on that, but I think it's the end of May. I've turned in all the files, and they're going to the printer. So that's, I think, when it's either very end of May or very beginning of June. And then we'll see what happens next.
Are you taking a break before the second arc?
Yes. Yes, I am. And then we'll see what happens.
Fantastic. And since the last time we talked, The People Inside has come out.
Yes.
A standalone graphic novel from Oni, thematic sequel to One Soul. Talk a bit about the structure of that book and what the story, what the book is.
Well, I mean, One Soul was a book about human life and the experience of being a human being. So it was about 18 different people's entire lives from birth till death. The People Inside is a book about 12 different love affairs from birth till death. And it's about the experience of love in all its very many variations. So some of it is happy love, some of it is tragic love, some of it is painful love, and one particular affair is actually an affair that never happens. It's between two characters that, had they met, they may have fallen in love, but they never do over the course of the book. Spoiler. So it follows in the experimental vein of One Soul. If One Soul was about individuals and their attempt to find purpose in life, then The People Inside is about couples and their attempt to find meaning in each other.
And you play with the physical form of comics. In One Soul, you could follow, for example, the upper left corner, the upper left panel of each page, of each two-page spread would be one story. Now you go a step further in The People Inside with that.
Yes, it's further complicated by the fact that since the characters are together, they share panel space. But if characters split from each other, then a gutter is drawn between them to make it clear that something has interrupted their love for each other, whether it's one of them is no longer in love or whether they just cannot be together anymore. So now, similar to One Soul, you can read an individual's story throughout, but you can also see how their lives merge and separate from other characters. So yeah, it's another complicated step to add to the storytelling style.
Now, there's one decision you made in that structure that stuck with me the entire year, and it has been impossible to explain to anyone why two panels of pitch black with a gutter between them has stuck with me as the strongest, as the most powerful thing I saw all year.
Well, since the gutter indicates separation in this book, and another shorthand in this book is that when a character is dead, their panel goes black and remains that way for the rest of the book to indicate that they are gone, but I don't want the reader to forget them, just to show that their position remains, but empty. And there is, in one of the affairs in the book, one of the characters dies and leaves the other behind. So the second character, who is mourning their lost partner, is next to a gutter space divided from a black panel for the rest of his life until he dies as well. And the two of them then are blacked out for the remainder of the book, but the gutter does not go away. They're still separate forever. And it was something I kind of wanted to say, and I wanted to remind the readers that the two of them were together for their lives, but from the moment of the death of one of them, they are forever apart.
So it's a really powerful piece. I could never express why that stuck with me, but it's certainly made me stop in the reading of it.
I'm glad to hear that. It had the effect that I wanted it to have, though.
Fantastic. Now, Intersect, trade paperback coming out. What's the next thing for you?
I have a graphic novel coming out from Top Shelf that was illustrated by Vincent Locke, and it's a book called Junction True, and it's sort of a horror heartbreak book. It's about people in a subculture that performs plastic surgery on themselves, and I'm not going to say more than that because I don't want to ruin it, but it's beautifully painted by Vincent Locke, and it's going to be coming out this summer from Top Shelf.
Fantastic. Well, I'll look for that, and next year I'll be here. You'll be here at the expo. I'll be here to talk to you about how great that graphic novel was, I imagine.
I certainly hope so. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks again to Ray. Ray was doing commissions at the show, so it was way, way busier than he has been the other years he's been there. He's been doing painted commissions. So it was late on Friday that it was almost the last thing I did at the whole convention, actually, was interviewing Ray. Terrific guy, terrific creator. Make sure to get Intersect. Trade paperbacks out soon. Incredibly beautiful book. That was awesome. Closing on the end of the expo. There is one, I got a little anecdote I'll share, as we're kind of thinking of last thoughts. As I was doing an interview with Gerhard, I paused, we finished up the interview and then just kind of chit chatting a bit, and someone came up and they were looking at, Gerhard had a piece of original work, which is on art board. And the guy wanted to buy it, and Gareth said, I haven't scanned it yet. I really just wanted to show it off. You can contact me through my website. And the guy was really fanboying, talking to Gerhard, wanted to buy anything that was on his table. And as I'm standing there, just kind of about to make my way away, I realize it's Richard Starkings who is here, just, fawning over Gerhard. So I love seeing those moments of, remember that even these creators are, they're often big comic fans themselves, and there is someone there that they're thrilled to see.
I like the story on Sunday when we went up to say goodbye to Rob, and Rob looked at Chris, grabbed a ninjack, and said, "Here, kid, that's for you."
You know, awesome. I've been sick since the expo. I'm blaming the ninjack, man.
You think that's what...
It was virus infected or something.
For 2 days, he had people coughing on that trade paperback of ninjack.
But, yeah, it was a terrific weekend. It's a good way for me to go out and never go to another one. You know, love that panel one party. Love seeing people like Fiona Staples that for one reason or another weren't at the actual expo still come out to that panel one party. Like, that's a really cool thing too. I just want to mention. Yeah, great, great. Any other last thoughts from you guys?
I
Rob's
got
a great
awesome,
guy. Connor's a great guy. Everybody's a great guy, except for
Ninjak. Really, except for Ninjak.
Exactly.
I think this is our best expo ever.
I'm sorry, pardon me?
This was our best expo ever.
Oh, unquestionably. So I think we should go out on top and never do another one, guys.
Well, we'll see if the expo wants to do another one next year, and then we'll make our decision.
Yeah, yeah. They might choose not to, right? They might say 10-0.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work. You got to organize so many people. Maybe it's just too much. So anyway, thanks again to the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. They gave us great access to record all the panels, to do all these interviews. You'll be hearing interviews on We Talk Wrestling as well as on We Talk Comics and the newly launched We Talk Cartoons. And great to have spent the whole weekend, you know, aside from Friday when I disappeared because I wanted to do some shopping with my We Talk pals. It was a really cool weekend. And I'm willing to do it again next year, even if Mo's not.
Yeah, I'm not.
Well, Mo is going to miss out on all those screamers that we're going to be having then.
Oh, Jesus.
There will be screamers.
You know what? I could go for the screamers, have a few, and leave.
Well, I'm not getting you a pass.
You say that now, Mo, but the siren song of the expo will draw you back.
I doubt it.
Yeah. When Rob's there, sent by DC to promote Airwave number one, he'll be drawn back.
I like it when you mentioned Airwave, sent a picture of him and stuff like that on Twitter the next day, and then Rob was thanking us for all the fun he had and hanging out with us, and said that we were good hosts and said the expo was great but tagged us as good hosts, and I said, really, you were here, Rob? You would have thought I would have noticed. And he goes, yeah, no, you would have thought then if I was there, I would have heard of this character Airwave that I haven't heard of.
With that, let us wrap up. Let's close the We Talk Comics.
Geek Nation Tours. Do we want to mention them?
We should.
We'll have the ad at the top.
Just mention them. And, of course, our friends at Comicosity, where you will be able to get this as well, who's the best. We didn't talk actually anything going on currently in comic books. Because we don't need to, because you're going to go and visit the best website for comic book coverage, pure comic book coverage in the world, Comicosity.
Yes, and check out, you hear all of our amazing experiences at the Calgary Expo. Check out our friends at Geek Nation Tours, and you know, maybe see if you want to take in their New York Comic Con, which it's a monster.
You can make your own
follow us
comic
on Twitter
memories.
That's right.
Follow us on Twitter at We Talk Podcasts. Follow us on Facebook / We Talk Podcasts. Email us if you'd like. info@wetalkpodcasts. And I have nothing. I'm like Chris when he's talking to Garth Ennis.
That's pretty typical. Yeah. Dog
and
welder,
visit,
man.
Visit Chris's GeoCities site that's his tribute to Dog Welder.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Did you guys see that new website? I put it up on my Facebook. I've discovered it's the greatest website of all time. It's a website dedicated just to trying to figure out how tall Arnold Schwarzenegger is. And is he lifting? You're comparing him and he's different people in different movies and his different heights. And then it's got a gallery of him in like all sorts of different lifts that they've photoshopped and standing next to people. It's the funniest thing of all time. It's the greatest new website. I think it's called Arnold's True Height or something like that, but it was the greatest thing ever.
All right. And with all that nonsense, we are OUT.